Tick tock, 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 Radio Attack. Eine andere Welt ist möglich.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zur 1087. Folge von Radio Attack mit mir, Elias Bernhard. Spätestens seit der Veröffentlichung der Panama Papers sind legale Steuervermeidung und Steueroasen der breiten Öffentlichkeit ein Begriff. Oft werden jene aber als unvermeidbar und Steuerflucht als legitimes Mittel der Vermögenden angesehen. Doch warum Steuerhinterziehung und Vermeidung keinesfalls ein Naturgesetz, sondern eine politische Entscheidung ist, erklärt uns in der heutigen Folge der französische Ökonom Gabriel Sukman. Sukman ist einer der renommiertesten Ökonomen unserer Zeit und führender Forscher im Bereich der Vermögensverteilung und Steuerfragen. Er hält eine Professur der Ökonomie an der University of California in Berkeley und wurde unter anderem von der American Economic Association als Ökonom unter 40 Jahren mit größtem Einfluss auf ökonomisches Denken mit der Clark Medal ausgezeichnet. Am 15. Mai war Sukman in der Arbeiterkammer Wien zu Gast, um einerseits seine Erkenntnisse aus dem Global Tax Evasion Report vorzustellen und andererseits mit dem AK-Ökonomen Matthias Schnetzer über dessen Implikationen und Bedeutung für Österreich zu sprechen. Dieses sehr interessante Gespräch zwischen Schnetzer und Sukman hören Sie in der heutigen Episode. Den gesamten Auftritt Sukmans können Sie auch als Video auf dem YouTube-Kanal der AK Wien nachschauen. Aber jetzt viel Spaß mit dem Gespräch zwischen Sukman und Schnetzer.
And we will now bring everything into the Austrian context and ask what we can do also in Austria to fight the tax evasion. So, and I am proud to welcome my colleague Matthias Schnetzer. Matthias Schnetzer is an expert in our Department of Economics, and he works on the topics of income and wealth distribution, on social mobility, political economy, and labor issues. Welcome, Matthias. Starting with you, Matthias, having heard the presentation, do we know what we lose in Austria due to tax evasion? What is the extent? What is how big is the problem in Austria? Have we any numbers? Have we any data?
I'm very grateful, Gabriel, for your presentation and also all those valuable insights from the Global Tax Evasion Report. And it cannot be stressed enough how much the work by Gabriel and the whole tax observatory has improved our knowledge and understanding of tax avoidance and tax evasion, in particular because you provide high quality and harmonized data for us. And one of those fantastic online services is, you already mentioned it, the Atlas of the Offshore World that is hosted by the Tax Observatory, and where you can find all those interesting figures also for Austria. And according to this source, roughly 10% of all corporate income tax revenues in Austria are lost due to the fact that multinational corporations shift their profits to countries with lower tax rates. And most of those countries are within the European Union and not in the Caribbean. So roughly 80% of those tax losses due to profit shifting from Austria goes to other European countries. And this alone amounts to roughly 1 billion euro in tax money that is lost per year. And here we are talking about undesirable but completely legal methods of profit shifting. Of course, besides the corporate income tax, there are also other taxes that may be legally or illegally avoided. But unfortunately, we do not have that good data on this issue. In fact, we do have individual estimates from single research papers. And this research tries to quantify a tax evasion in the shadow economy and in the offshore world, where by definition there is only little data, and even though some leaked documents brought some light into the darkness. So those numbers are, they come with quite some uncertainty, but let's look at the numbers. So those estimations suggest that 400 million euros a year are lost due to tax evasion for capital income. Additionally, 1.2 billion euros a year are lost due to tax evasion for labor income, and roughly 3 billion euros are estimated to be lost due to tax evasion and tax fraud for the value-added tax. So these are some examples. In total, recent research suggests that the tax gap, so the gap between taxes that are actually paid and taxes that should be legally paid, amounts to roughly 12 to 15 billion euros a year. And that's a significant amount of money that's getting lost here.
Mm-hmm. So you said it's about 12 to 15, the gap between what is actually paid and what should legally be paid. So that's quite a lot in the Austrian context. So why is this such a big problem, Matthias? So what do we lose as a society if the multinationals and the super rich do not contribute sufficiently?
There are, of course, many problems for the economy, for society and for democracy when taxes are avoided and when there is a lack of tax justice. I limit myself on 3 points here. So first, the welfare state currently needs solid financial resources to tackle current and also future challenges. We know that we now need public investments right at the moment to get the climate crisis under control or to solve the crisis in the caring system in Austria. So estimations say that we need an additional 70,000 care workers in the next few years and several thousand nurses, school teachers in Austria. To afford the energy and mobility transition, there is an estimation by the Technical University of Vienna that estimates that we need an aggregate of 37 billion euros in public investment until 2030. Okay, so these are huge challenges, and that is why everybody must pay their fair contribution and not shirk their responsibility. And we simply cannot and do not want to afford tens of billions of euros tax avoidance. Second, the lack of tax justice might also undermine democracy. So if people perceive the tax system as unfair, because they pay their taxes, but others don't, they might deem the system as dysfunctional or undemocratic. And there is evidence that exactly those people who feel treated unfairly or who feel disadvantaged, they do not exercise their right to vote anymore in an increasing number. And of course, there are many fold reasons for the abstention from voting. But one of those reasons is that there is a decreasing belief that this system is fair. Mm. And third and last, and Gabriel also mentioned it, tax avoidance is unevenly distributed across the distribution. Seminal work co-authored by Gabriel shows that tax evasion is mostly a problem at the top of distribution. And if the bottom 99.9% of the population pay their fair share out of their income, but the top, the billionaires, don't, or do to a lesser extent, inequality increases. This fuels wealth concentration. And so tax avoidance does not only reduce tax revenues that are so important for the social state, but they also impede the redistributional function of the tax system.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So, Gabriel, we heard that if we do not really sufficiently fight tax evasion, we cannot finance the welfare state, we cannot fight the climate crisis, we have a problem with our democracy as well. So you pointed out that it's not a law of nature, yeah, that the super rich don't pay their taxes, it's a policy choice. In your opinion, what would you say are the, let's say, three most important measures that we can take? Is it taxing the super rich? Is it the IPCC for taxation? What would it be?
I think that number one, unsurprisingly, it's this coordinated minimum tax on the super rich. Mm-hmm. I really hope that we can make quickly progress on that. You saw the picture, right? In France, Netherlands, US, everybody pays a lot of tax, but the super rich have lower effective tax rates than all other social groups. It's unacceptable. It can only fuel distrust with governments. The revenue losses at stake are really important, and it's best addressed, as I explained, through international cooperation. So number one, we need this minimum tax on the super rich. Number two, we need to build on the minimum tax for multinational firms that we have and make it much better, okay? Its virtue is that it exists. It has the loopholes that I mentioned, but it has a very low rate of 15%. But any country or group of countries could say, well, look, for us, we are going to choose a higher minimum rate. You know, we in Austria, we think that the rate, should be no lower than 23%, what our small businesses pay. And so for us, it's going to be 20 or 25%. And you don't need unanimity or consensus to do that. I want to emphasize that. It's not because you have an international floor that all countries have to converge to that floor. You know, all the countries that want to be more ambitious can do it, and they should do it. Number three is it's important, beyond those two minimum taxes, to reintroduce real progressivity in our tax systems by reforming the income tax and recreating progressive wealth taxes. So the progressivity of the income tax has been undermined in many countries over the last decades, because typically in many countries, capital income is taxed at lower rates than labor income. The reason why countries have felt that they had to do that is because they thought, well, it's so hard to tax capital income. You know, the wealthy can easily move their wealth. Taking, again, tax evasion as some kind of law of nature, they felt that the only possible answer was to cut the rate, when the right answer is to say, no, let's fight the tax evasion. Let's close, these possibilities of wealth concealment, and then you can increase the rates. And then, of course, and I'll conclude with that, the debate that's happening and going to happen in Austria about progressive wealth taxation is probably the most important debate of all. Because in the minimum tax and the super rich that I presented, it's just on billionaires, it's a tiny population, but there's no reason to tax just billionaires, right? It makes perfect sense to complement the income tax with a progressive wealth tax. And here, it's going to be essential to learn the lessons from the past. Austria had a wealth tax before 1993. Many European countries have experience with wealth taxation, but they did it poorly. Those wealth taxes essentially exempted the super rich. There was no effort at fighting tax evasion. There was no effort at, fighting tax competition. Wealth was poorly valued, poorly measured. It led to all sorts of inequities. We need to draw the lessons from those mistakes and recreate wealth taxes where all assets are valued at their correct market value. There's no exemption for anything, no matter what type of assets you own. That should be subject to the tax. And in exchange for that broader base, you can start higher in the wealth distribution. The goal shouldn't be to tax people who have a primary residence, who have less than €1 million. It should be to tax the very rich, and we can discuss what this means. But people with several millions or dozens of millions, and with graduated rates that rise with wealth, that is really the most important policy, in my view.
So we heard that taxing the super rich is one of the most important things of all times, maybe. Coming back to you, Matthias, there are several initiatives we heard about that have an impact, but you can also do or have an impact unilaterally. So what would you say, looking to Austria, what are the most important steps to be done in Austria?
Yeah, unfortunately, Austria has gone in the wrong direction in many ways, I'm afraid. So I would like to approach this question by showing what Austria should not do or should not have done. So first, do not default on directives from the European Parliament, at least the sensible ones. In 2021, the European Parliament has adopted a directive for more tax transparency by requiring multinational corporations to publicly report in which European countries they generate profits and in which country they pay their taxes, the so-called country-by-country reporting. And the single member states were actually supposed to implement this law on a national level by June 2023, so 18 months after the adoption of the directive on the European level. Now we're 1 year later, and still Austria has not passed this law for more tax transparency. So we missed the deadline. Rumor has it that in one of the next parliamentary sessions in Austria, this law will be passed, so we're waiting for it, so we'll see if this is happening. Second, do not participate in a harmful downward tax competition by reducing corporate income tax rates. And this is what actually was happening in Austria right recently, where the corporate income tax rate was reduced from 25% to 23% in the last 2 years. And this has already cost us €1 billion. Right now, and the beneficiaries are the large corporations. For instance, the Austrian banking sector has reported all-time high profits in the last two consecutive years. And due to the tax reduction, they have additionally saved more than 100 billion, more than 100 million euros that should actually be paid in taxes, but they don't have to because tax rates were cut. So those are the beneficiaries of this reduction. So the demand is simple. Just revert the tax rate cut to back to a level that, by the way, is also mentioned in the Global Tax Evasion Report as sensible level, which is 25%. Third, do not reduce tax audits. The number of staff positions in the Austrian tax administration has been cut by roughly 20% in the last two decades. Auditing activities have declined by almost 60% in the last decade. Moreover, there has been a task force that was specifically aiming at high net worth individuals, so the super rich, for auditing activities. And this group was dissolved in 2018. It only existed 2 years, and they made a huge profit for in tax revenues in those 2 years. And moreover, 70% of all private foundations in Austria have never, ever been audited. So we need effective controls and penalties for tax evasion through sufficient auditing activities and also through sufficient staff positions in the tax administration. Last but not least, do not reject wealth taxes. There is no other Western European countries where wealth concentration is as high as in Austria, while wealth-related taxation is as low as in Austria. And this wealth concentration comes with several economic, ecological, and social consequences. So many initiatives and also supranational institutions are calling for higher wealth-related taxes in Austria. the majority in the population is in favor for such taxes for the super rich. And even the wealthy or a couple of wealthy themselves organize themselves in initiatives like Tax Me Now and say we want to pay a fair share of our tax. So, and the last or latest endeavors by the G20 that was incited by Gabriel and also, as he sits right here, Quentin Parinello, his senior policy advisor, is very welcomed here. They give the whole discussion a new momentum and they create a new dynamic. So now is the time to push forward for wealth taxation.
Thank you, Matthias. So coming to the end, the last question to you, Gabriel. Please give some very concrete suggestions to our Austrian policymakers. They do need your help.
Look, I think that I want to start by emphasizing again the idea in my conclusion that you shouldn't be afraid of the threat that rich people are going to agitate to leave the country for tax reasons. Because it's true that, you know, some wealthy people, they favor more taxes for wealthy people. But most wealthy people, they favor lower taxes for wealthy people. And they have a particular hatred for wealth taxation. They particularly dislike the wealth tax. They have good reason to dislike it. It's because this is the one tax that can actually work to tax them. And so they really are willing to fight it. In practice, the main way for them to fight it is to say, look, if you try to have a wealth tax, we'll just move. You know, we'll go to Switzerland, we'll go to whatever. And so my main advice is, this is, you know, you have to prepare for that debate. And I think, you know, there are different answers that can be given. The standard answer that progressives, you know, like to give is to say, oh, well, look, you know, you always threaten to leave, but at the end of the day, you don't do it. Very few people move. And that's quite true. You know, it's when you look at and there are careful studies that have been conducted, for instance, that looked at wealth tax reforms in Sweden and Norway and Denmark, and, you know, the impact and the mobility of the super rich. You know, the what researchers find is that the number of very rich people who actually move to tax havens is really quite low. But I don't think that's the best answer, because in the public debate, the threat really, you know, can carry the day, you know, can really influence the voters. I think a much better answer is to say, look, you can move. You know, you're free to go wherever you want, but you will have to keep paying taxes in Austria for at least a few years. And, you know, it's a relatively novel idea. There's no country that really does that at the moment. In fact, you have two polar cases. You have, on the one hand, you have the US that has what is known as citizenship-based taxation, meaning that if you were born in the US and so you have US citizenship, you're supposed to pay taxes in the US until you die, even if, you know, your parents move out of the US when you were 2 months old and you never set foot again in the US. Okay, so even if you never spend only 2 months during your life in the US, you have to pay taxes in the US for your entire life. That's one model, which is extreme in one direction. But you have to realize that what all other countries do, like Austria, France, all other countries do the exact opposite, which is that if you've spent all your life in Austria and become very rich there, now you decide to move to a tax haven, then immediately on January 1st of next year, that's it. You have no tax to pay anymore in Austria. And that's extreme in the opposite direction, and that's also very, very bad. The right system is a middle ground where taxes should continue to apply if you've lived in a country for a long time. You know, citizenship shouldn't be relevant. What matters is whether you've spent a long time in a country and whether you've become very rich in that country. And you don't want to burden people, you know, students, you know, middle-income people having to pay taxes after they've left Austria. That's not the point. It should be only for rich people. But that's the right approach. And let me just mention that I think the reason why this has not been done in the past is because it was hard to track the wealth and the income of non-residents. You know, let's say someone moves to Switzerland, you know, because there was no exchange of bank information, it was very hard for Austria to say, look, we are going to keep taxing you. But now we can build on the automatic exchange of bank information. And we can ask Swiss banks to report information about the former residents of Austria that the Austrian tax authority could use to pre-populate an income tax return, a wealth tax return, send it to the person and tell them, look, this is what you have to pay. So that's my main very concrete advice. And I have presented that report in a number of countries, and everywhere I go, I try to convince, you know, people, policymakers, and civil society in that country that we need one country to do it, to demonstrate that this is feasible. Now it has become feasible, and you will see that as soon as one country does it, you know, very quickly other countries will follow suit. And I bet that, I don't know if it's in 5 or 10 or 20 years, but this will become the global norm. But we need one country to show the light, to pave the way. So, you know, my call tonight is let it be Austria.
Yeah. Would be a good thing, I think, and yeah. We hope Austria makes that move and follows the money, as you prescribed. So let's sum things up. We have a lot of data about tax evasion. We know what we lose when we do not tax the super rich, the multinationals, the billionaires. We know what society's problems will be if that money is not available for all of us when it comes to welfare, democracy in general, the climate crisis, and so on. So there are no excuses. We know what works. We know what measures do work and what do not work so well. So the time to act is now, I would say. And yeah, I hope we will all be part of that change. So thank you for coming here tonight. Thank you for joining us via live stream, and you're invited to join our little gathering outside in the foyer. Thank you, Gabriel.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
You, Matthias. Thank you, Markus. And yeah, wish you a pleasant evening and goodbye.
Meine Brüder, weit verstreut mögt ihr auch sein. Denkt daran, die neue Zeit kommt nicht von allein.
Denkt daran, die neue Zeit kommt nicht von allein.
Im alten Staat regieren die Herren mit ihrem Apparat. Und den werden wir zerstören, um ihn ist nicht schad.
Und den werden wir zerstören, um ihn ist nicht schad.
Der alte Bauplan taugt uns nicht für den neuen Staat. Neues Werkzeug brauchen wir und Pläne für die Tat.
Neues Werkzeug brauchen wir und Pläne für die Tat.
Haben wir Werkzeug nicht dabei, müssen wir es finden. Gibt es keine Kampfpartei, müssen wir sie gründen.
Gibt es keine Kampfpartei, müssen wir sie gründen.
Wie muss unser Hammer sein, Hobel und Plan? Sonst schiebt man uns die Freiheit weg, noch ehe sie begann.
Sonst schiebt man uns die Freiheit weg, noch ehe sie begann.
Meine Brüder, sammelt euch, wo immer ihr seid. Einig bauen wir jetzt und gleich das Haus der neuen Zeit.
Radio Attac gibt es auch im Internet unter www.radioattac.at.
I'm Sharon Jones of Sharon Jones and the Dab Kings, and you're listening to Radio Laura 97.5 MHz.
Radio Laura auf 97,5 MHz.
Reclaim Democracy. So hieß der Kongress, der letzte Woche in Zürich stattgefunden hat. Reclaim Democracy, Reclaim Hope. Der Beschrieb vom Kongress ist: Krise überall, aber wo sind die positiven Zukunftsentwürfe?